It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com. My name is Garrett Chapman. You're coming off the bench with me. 1 hour down. We got three to go. And Eric Slaughter, I told you during the break, but fantasy football is a big deal for a lot of people. I know Bo Johnson, he has his own show. We have a full hour every single week devoted to fantasy football. People have made it's a multi-million dollar industry. And I'm in several leagues myself playing for couple of peanuts here and there, nothing too crazy. But, Eric, I just realized I'm legitimately in the middle of a draft right now. I have it pulled up right here in front of me, and I'm like, I got a show to do, guys. And they're like, no. Fantasy football comes first.
One eye on your laptop, one eye on the TV, and your mind on your show. I don't know what to tell you, bro.
I'm in this group here. They're all chatting it up and they're talking about it. I'm sure people have been in weird situations. I've been in a weird situation every single year with this one league in particular. It's my turn to draft now. Let's say Jahmyr Gibbs. I'll draft him. There we go. Beautiful. But one person just literally got out of the operating room. No, he's not the guy on the table. He's the guy who's operating on the other person. But he's a literal surgeon. He just finished up there. He's washing up. He's going to go take a shower, and then he's going to jump into this draft. He's got priorities, you know. Meanwhile, I'm just doing sports radio, but, you know.
As I say, you're running big circles, man.
I know, man.
With surgeons and stuff.
We're just having fun with it, man. We're enjoying it, and it's, look, I took Jahmyr Gibbs with my first pick. I didn't even look and see who else was available. I just looked and kind of just rolled with it. But I do want to talk a little bit of college football. Florida State is about 30 minutes away from kicking off. It's Boston College there for the last game. In week one, we knew what they did last week, and I'm going to come through here, and this is, I'm introducing this new machine. I've got this little list of things here, and I've written them all down, and they're all each individual papers, and I'm going to slide it into the machine, and it's going to give me a reaction, right? I call it the overreactometer. It's pretty cool. It'll give me a scale from 1 to 10. I've written out all of these different overreactions that I have and that I've seen on Twitter, and I'm going to see what the machine does. So, Eric, what do you say? Let's start with this one. Number one, Clemson's championship program dead and gone. Let me put this in here. There it is. All right, there it is. Overreactometers gives it a 4. A 4. That's interesting. Yeah, Georgia outgained Clemson.
What's the scale?
1 to 10.
Snap it one time.
Let me do that. Let me try it again. Let me put it in here again. All right. Here you go. Yeah, no, came back and gave me a 4. Okay, let me see the description. So, yeah, Georgia outgained Clemson 447 to 188. The Dogs nearly outrushed their total output, 169 yards rushing to 188 total yards. They scored 4 touchdowns on 4 of their first drives in the second half. And, you know, 99% of the sport, they have to deal with some kind of variance. Not the Georgia Bulldogs. Week one, look, this team, when they have 7-plus days to prepare, specifically Kirby Smart, he's 10-0 in those 10 games since 2021. They've won 7 of those by 22-plus points. They're better than even the best think they are. They're so damn good at playing football. And if you give him any time to prepare, they're that much better. Man, it's fun. Those guys, what they're able to do to even the best teams, it's crazy. And that's what the best teams do. They adapt. Kirby adapted. He saw in 2020 that this is a team that needs a revitalized offense. They need to come back and be bigger and better on offense. So he goes and gets Todd Monken. He resets and brings back Mike Bobo after Monken goes off to the NFL. He goes and he gets big-time offensive players, skill players on the outside. They're deep as hell at the wide receiver position. The running back, they're four deep. Nate Frazier, what is he able to do? My God, the freshman. Saban adapted in 2014 when he realized that his offense wasn't good enough. They needed to go to a spread. He hated it. He wrote a book and talked about how much he hated it. Ryan Day is doing that right now. He hasn't won a championship yet, but his defense was lacking. It was the reason they were losing games to Michigan. He ups his physicality, and watch what's going to happen this year. I'll put my chips in the center of the table there, just like Ryan Day is. They're going to smash Michigan later on this season. And they have debatably one of the best defenses in college football. They already have one of the best offenses, but the defense is about as good as anybody in college football. I'll put them toe-to-toe with the best. But Clemson, their days as a championship contender are over. So that's why it's a four. It's not an overreaction. It's not an overreaction that Clemson's championship program is dead and gone. They still might be the best team in the ACC, but that's not the point. The point is, in a 12-team era, they're just not good enough. You saw what the best team in college football looks like, and you are 31 points inferior. And I don't even think Georgia played that well. They started really slow. Really slow. Second half, you saw them turn it on. Cade Klubnik, Garrett Riley, they're meh. Wide receivers are non-existent. Offensive line is meh. Peter Woods, he leads a very strong front seven. But that's not enough. Your DBs are meh. They fell down. They wavered down the stretch. So who is Clemson? Not a championship contender anymore. All right, number two. Georgia Tech is a top 25 team. Oh, wow. Let's put this in here. A two. So not an overreaction. That's crazy. So the poll does come out tomorrow. Georgia Tech, of course, they go on the technically on the road. They hop on a plane and fly out to Dublin, Ireland. They get a dominating win. Tight win, but they looked really damn good against Florida State. We're going to find out who Florida State is. They got a game coming up here in about 30 minutes, taking on Boston College, another physical running football team. Bill O'Brien getting his college football debut as the head coach. We'll see what they can end up doing in that one, but the overreactometer says that that's not an overreaction. It is not an overreaction. I tend to agree. I think that Georgia Tech, they should be in that 23-ish range. Poll comes out tomorrow morning. I would not be surprised if they can do it. And that's all credit to Brent Key. Everything he has done at that program, they have an opportunity on Saturday. They're going up to Syracuse. You put out a strong performance in week three. You have a very, very good chance that you are 4-0, after VMI next week. All respect to VMI. All respect to them. They're not a legitimate team that's going to come down here and beat Georgia Tech. They are, then that's a different question entirely. So if you can go on the road, go get a win at the Carrier Dome, you're 4-0 coming back to Atlanta. And the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets are, then they have a matchup with Louisville, and they might, look, this team has a chance to go on a run. They've got some momentum, and they got it built up in the trenches. They looked, so far, like a top 25 team. Number three, Notre Dame and Marcus Freeman have arrived. Let's put it in here. Ooh, the first big one of the day. It is an overreaction. It's an 8. Ooh, that's crazy. Yeah. So the Fighting Irish, they go on the road. They go down to Texas A&M. They get a really strong win, 23-13. Riley Leonard, he's a strong quarterback. Defense looks legit. Still a lot of question marks on this team as a whole. Is that offensive line going to be good enough to hold up? Not a lot of depth there. They are just an injury or two away from really falling off by the wayside. I like them. I like them. The overreactometer, not so much. I don't know why that's the case, but look, Marcus Freeman, he's a pretty good coach. I really like what I've seen from Marcus Freeman and company this season. They started off slow in years past, but they looked really good in this one. And they looked physical. They looked very physical. And my biggest concern for the Fighting Irish in this game was not that they were a bad football team, that they weren't going to get it done. It was the fact that they were going to go into Texas A&M and kind of be starstruck, but they weren't. Marcus Freeman let him in, and hey, they looked like they were the better team for much of the night. And Texas A&M, I got more questions about them than I do with Notre Dame at this point. Connor Wegman, not very good. I just need to see Notre Dame do it on a consistent basis. Really, just need to see it on a consistent basis. Really surprised it's an 8. That seems like a big one. Number four, Florida is done. Let's put it in there. Oh, a one. Not an overreaction at all. Not at all. 41-17 losers. Florida Gators lose to the Miami Hurricane. That's the largest home loss in over a decade. They had zero passes of 10-plus yards. Zero passes. Graham Mertz was supposed to come in and be a Mr. Consistent at the quarterback position. Not so fast, my friend. He just was not able to get anything done. They were at home. Didn't feel like it. Didn't feel like they were at home. Half the stadium was empty because they were getting blown out. Six of the first eight drives ended in points for Miami. That's called domination. Domination. Killed them. I mean, heck, their recruits were getting dapped up by Miami by the end of the game. That was ridiculous. I mean, I'll play that for you here in audio overload. Some of the reactions from that were just unbelievable. But Billy Napier is now 11-15 as a head coach of Florida in the midst of a six-game losing streak dating back to last season. And now the schedule just gets harder. They talked all offseason about how they were not going to be intimidated by this schedule that they had. Just the final five games of the season are ridiculous. This was supposed to be the game where you're like, all right, this is a game that you win. Set the tone. Get rolling. Now people are out on social media saying this team is a 1-11 type team, maybe a 10-2, or a 2-10. I'm not going that far necessarily, but as far as being a viable, legitimate program, Florida might be the worst team in the SEC. There, I said it. Yes, worse than Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt went just won against Virginia Tech, a team that had legitimate dark horse expectations to win the ACC. You just got blasted by Miami at home. Speaking of which, I have another one here. ACC. Is it Miami's to lose? All right, let's see. Ooh, a six. Right there in the middle. Yeah, I think Miami. They're a CFP contender. Cam Ward, he looks like a Heisman frontrunner. They look really damn good. 385, three tutties, and a 74% completion percentage for Cam Ward. I need to see, like I mentioned before, consistency, consistency, consistency. Specifically from Cam Ward, because he did the same thing last year. He started very hot. They were like, oh my God, this guy is, he might go win a Heisman Trophy. He's throwing the ball over the yard. Then he falters down the stretch. That's what he is. It's the Cam Ward roller coaster. I just need to see it happen a little bit more consistently. This team, but they legitimately could have gone for 60. The physicality in the trenches was off the charts. Still not a big Mario Cristobal guy. Yes, because he doesn't know how to kneel a ball. Because that guy's still there. You had a 4th-and-1 in this game where your offense is cooking at an all-time high. And you pump the ball. And then Florida gets the ball back. You're up 17-3 at the time. They get a good punt return. And then they bust down the left sideline, Montrell Johnson, and it cuts 17-10. That could have changed the games. That could have changed the game. It didn't. He gets away with it. But he's 11-19 all-time. 1-5 at Miami in one-score games against teams that finished 500 or better. I don't think Florida's a 500 or better team. This is what you're supposed to do against inferior competition, which, yes, Florida's inferior competition right now. Let's see. That was fun. I might pull that back in later in the show if we have some time. But the overreactometer, college football is back. Week one action. We are just finishing up here. Florida State and Boston College. They'll take us to the end of the line. But we're going to continue the college football conversation. Connor O'Gara is going to join me here on the other side. You're coming off the bench with me, Garrett Chapman, on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
you deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through, you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame,
two more.
You deserve this ice cold reward. Modelo, the markable fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Welcome back in Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. You're coming off the bench with Garrett Chapman, and let's go out to the WadeFord.com hotline. Connor O'Gara joining me here from Saturday down south. Week one action, big week of football here in the SEC. So let's bring him in, talk a little bit about this. Connor, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well, man. Once week one kind of comes to a close, it's always a bit surreal. I'm like, wow, that was a full weekend of football, like wall-to-wall action. Man, we're recording this before Monday, we see what Florida State does for its encore. But yeah, that week one, man, it's a blur. You feel like the stuff that happened on Thursday was like, you know, 2 years ago.
Yeah, all of the talking season from June, July, and August, it all gets put to the test here. So that actually kind of lends itself to the first question that I have for you, Connor. It's the winners and losers from week one. It's hard to really go too deep into it. I know everybody really wants to. Last segment, I was going to come in and do the biggest overreactions from the week. I have tons of overreactions, but I want to ask you what your overreactions are. Biggest winners and losers, what you got?
Yeah, biggest winner, Miami. I mean, Miami, what it did in the swamp was such a loud statement. And I was not on the Miami train this offseason at all. I'm like, what are we doing? We've been doing this for the last 20 years. I understand that we all love Cam Ward. We love the fact that Mario Cristobal took a more aggressive approach in the portal, getting a guy like Damian Martinez coming on board, Tyler Barron, you add him to that defensive line, which you already felt pretty good about. And you kind of wonder, what is it all going to mean, especially in an opener, a hostile atmosphere? And my God, they took over that place. The Swamp, even when Florida is not good, is still a tough place to play. Mm-hmm. And for them to come in and set the tone in such emphatic fashion, to me, stood out. It wasn't fluky. It was dominance. And even when it was a one-score game, kind of early in the second quarter, I'm texting with my co-host, Will Ogburn, Miami's a better football team. And if Miami doesn't win this game, this is going to be a huge indictment of Mario Cristobal. And instead, it turns into just a bloodbath. And I thought Miami was absolutely the biggest winner. Maybe USC you could throw in there as well. I think that's probably the biggest narrative changing win that Lincoln Riley has had since that Florida bowl game that they won. I think it was the Cotton Bowl. They moved mm-hmm. bowl games all around, whatever that was. But for the first time in a long time, Lincoln Riley gave us something that made us feel different about him by beating that LSU team, an LSU team that obviously has struggled in openers. But yeah, to me, those were the two biggest winners. And then those two teams, LSU and Florida, are the biggest losers, because on that stage, I thought for different reasons, they kind of got embarrassed, and they are the subject of a lot of criticism this week. The SEC as a whole, I think, took it on the chin a little bit, with the exception of Georgia and Vandy. But yeah, to me, those are the four teams that kind of stand out just in terms of us thinking differently about them, or at least having stronger opinions about what they just did.
Yeah. So keeping it kind of in the state of Florida, just with Billy Napier and company, I mean, they kind of got out physical in this, not kind of, they got out physical yeah. in this game. They got beat up and down the field. And that was something that when Billy Napier was hired, I always expected him to come in and kind of bring that physicality that I felt like Dan Mullen was missing at times. That hasn't been the case, really. And then on top of that, you have the Scott Strickland, the Florida athletic director, that's coming in and saying that there's no need to make a change. There's nothing else that's going to be coming down the track.
Sure.
It would be an expensive firing. I think he's owed $26 million up front or something like that, right up front. I'm not sure what the exact number is. I think it's somewhere in that ballpark. But it's going to be expensive. But is it even more expensive in the fact that you're going to cost yourself fans and support, and this program is going to start faltering down the stretch? I mean, what is the situation down there in Florida?
It's bad. It's terrible. This coaching staff couldn't have asked for a worse start. You have 8 months of telling people, don't worry about the schedule. We're going to take it 1 week at a time, 1 week at a time. Mm-hmm. And then you show up and you have that against your in-state rival, and the stadium is clearing out. And for that to happen in a season opener, it's just such a gut punch, because there are people that when people that would say like, oh, you're sleeping on Florida. Everybody's sleeping on Florida. It's like, well, no, I'm not. They've had three consecutive losing seasons. This is the way that works. Mm-hmm. And you're still trying to show that you can actually build towards SEC relevance with this head coach. And to have that type of showing, yeah, I don't think it's crazy for Florida fans to want more. I don't want to hear from Scott Strickland that, oh, you know, we're not in any hurry to make a change. He's not going to be the one that's going to get to make that decision, because if Billy Napier gets fired, I understand Florida's an everything school. Scott Strickland's getting fired too if that happens. Yeah. And I know the Ben Sasse stuff, and there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of debate about what it's going to look like at the top university. They will find a way to fire a head football coach if they have half empty stadiums in October. I promise you that. So the number, yes, it is high. 26.7, I think, was the latest that I saw with Billy Napier.
Close.
Yeah, you were spot on. So like, that's the ballpark. And up until last year, we had never seen anybody pay that type of money to move on from a head coach. And then Texas A&M did what Texas A&M did by firing Jimbo Fisher. But I do think that for those who are saying, well, Florida fans, you just need to be patient. Why? What's the proof of concept for Billy Napier at this point? Because everything he said he was going to do, he has not done. And if you're not going to even have that ounce of physicality, which last year against Kentucky, when they just got punched in the mouth by that Mark Stoops coach team, all these Florida fans are like, wait a minute, Kentucky's doing what you said you were going to bring here, and they don't even have that yet. So to me, I will not hate on Florida if it cuts its losses after a 5-7 season. To me, that's not the sign of impatience. That's just the sign of incompetence.
Yeah, it was a tough showing for Florida. I mean, then you have the videos coming around and circulating on social media about the Miami players walking off the field and recruiting their recruits and everything else. It was just sort of an ugly scene for all parties involved, unless you're a Miami Hurricane. But Connor O'Gara joining me on the WadeFord.com hotline here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It was a bit of a mixed bag, I'd say, for the SEC. You said they took it on the chin. I tend to agree, except for that team in Athens. But before I move into the positive things that we did see from the conference, I want to finish up in the negative side of it. I don't want to necessarily say it that way, but the negatives, they lost. We talked about LSU. We talked about Florida. But Texas A&M, they took it on the chin. They lost to Notre Dame, a pretty good football team, a team with a lot of question marks. The offensive line had 6 combined starts, but that defense really still showed its colors. They looked pretty good, but Connor Wegman felt like he just wasn't quite enough. Is that a sign of things to come, or what did you learn from the Aggies?
Yeah, I think it's tough because Texas A&M was a 3-point favorite in this one. I don't remember what the final line ended up being, but A&M was favored to win this game because, or at least in position to, because of the biggest mismatch, or at least the biggest perceived mismatch in this game, was that Texas A&M defensive line with Nick Scorton, with Shamar Turner, Shamar Stewart, against this Notre Dame offensive line that you talked about with 6 combined starts. It's a post-Joe Alt world that the Irish were living in. And you have a new starting quarterback in Riley Leonard, who is facing the defensive-minded head coach that saw him every day for 2 years in Mike Elko. Yeah. So all those things, you kind of add it up, and you're like, yeah, 107,000 fans on the road. This isn't the type of game that Notre Dame wins. And I think there were a lot of people that went into that saying, yeah, I could see A&M being able to get that home crowd-fueled win in week one. And instead, down the stretch, I thought you saw the deficiencies that A&M has right now as a program. And I love the Colin Klein hire, and I am a Connor Wegman believer through and through. He spells his first name incorrectly, in my very biased opinion. That's another subject for another time. But I do think that he's going to have better days ahead. I think Colin Klein as a whole will have better days ahead. The issue is their offensive line is still not particularly good. And the different blitz packages that you saw Al Golden and Marcus Freeman throw at A&M had them rattled all game. Connor Wegman couldn't find anything in the passing game. And those Notre Dame defensive backs were going to the football better than his receivers were. So as much as I love Wegman, it's still about the surrounding pieces not being great. And you could tell that was impacting his decision-making. And I'm not trying to let him off the hook because he wasn't good enough to be able to win that football game. But down the stretch, they had no identity. I mean, he's throwing 9-yard outs to his running back as his primary target to try and pick up big first downs. And Le'Veon Moss can't pick up the first down because he doesn't have the presence of mind to stretch the football out to the first down mark. And you're like, man, that's kind of a sign of where this program and where this offense is at. They're searching for an identity. They really could have used Evan Stewart, who transferred to Oregon. Unfortunately, he's not with that team anymore. But yeah, man, A&M had an opportunity sitting right there to get a momentum-shifting win to start off the Mike Elko era. And instead, you look up and Notre Dame does something that very few people thought they would be capable of, which was closing down the stretch against a top 25 team on the road. And Marcus Freeman and company, they deserve a lot of credit for that.
Yeah, huge win for Marcus Freeman and Notre Dame. Bad day for all the haters of Notre Dame and that football program. But look, I mean, I like Texas A&M. I think they still have everything in front of them. They can still be maybe not a contender in the SEC, but a team to who can really jump into that realm of a top 25 team consistently on a week-in, week-out basis with Mike Elko this season specifically. The defense is going to be enough to carry them at times, but I need to see a little bit more from that offense. But one team that really hung its hat on some dominating defense were the Georgia Bulldogs. They came out in the second half and just absolutely obliterated Clemson. I mean, it was just a man versus boys. And in fact, the most damning thing I'd say about that game is the reaction that people had about it. They said, in no uncertain terms, it is like, yeah, well, Georgia does that to a lot of teams. Well, Clemson is not a lot of teams, or at least they're not supposed to be. They're supposed to be one of those championship contenders. Do you think that final score and the way everything ended up happening, does that say more about Georgia or does it say more about Clemson?
Clemson says way more about Clemson. And I thought Danny Cannell's take sucked. And I like DK.
You saw really that did. Too. Yeah.
Yeah, of course. I love DK. DK's a good dude. He's actually a lot better away from social media than he is on social media. But I thought that point about, well, you know, Ole Miss gets beat up by Georgia. You know, a lot of people do.
Yeah.
Ole Miss is not sitting there going, I wonder if we should go after this guy in the portal. Lane Kiffin exhausts all resources. Dabo Swinney gets paid eight figures, and he's not exhausting all resources. He's telling us he doesn't feel like he has to exhaust all resources, and he's wrong. And if you're telling me, all right, well, you know what? One transfer wasn't going to make the difference in that football game, and you know, even if they had gone after certain guys in the transfer portal, maybe it's not going to make the difference. But who's scoring those touchdowns for Georgia in the third quarter of that game? Transfers. Colby Young, London Humphreys. Both of those guys coming over this year in what is the first year without Brock Bowers, without Ladd McConkey. They lose Ra-Ra Thomas to the domestic violence arrest that he had in the offseason. They needed to beef up those receivers via the transfer portal. Kirby is using the portal the way that Dabo should be. You have areas of need in your position group, and you go out and you say, you know what? Let's plug and play that guy. I don't care if we get him for 1 or 2 years. We have an issue there. We need to be able to bring him in, and we need to be able to get somebody on board that's going to help us now. And instead, Dabo is under the belief that his development is so unbelievably good. You know what's not good? The fact that Clemson in the last 3 years has had two offensive players drafted. An offensive lineman who went in the fifth round and Will Shipley went in the fourth round. Clemson hasn't had an offensive player drafted in the first 2 days of the NFL draft since 2021, the Travis Etienne, Trevor Lawrence draft. That's terrible. That's a joke. That to me is a sign of a program that has fallen off. This is not a tier one program anymore. They had a really nice first half because they came out defensively, and I thought their defensive line really got after it, and they deserve a ton of credit for it. But they've fallen off, and this is not a program that's going to compete for an ACC championship. I think people were saying that. We're sipping the Kool-Aid for whatever reason. And to me, this is a sign that Dabo, in this adapt or die world, he's doing the latter, and it's not really debatable.
Yeah, I mean, Clemson's fallen off in a big way, and I think it just comes down to missing on the quarterback position, missing at the wide receiver position, and I think you hinted at it, you said it pretty much, and it's the fact that he believes that the guys on his roster are better than what you can find in the transfer portal.
And they're not. And
they're just not. And the proof is in the pudding. It's the fact that the results have shown and dictated over the last couple of years that Clemson is just not the program that they were. I had it in my overreactions that Clemson is dead and gone as a championship contender. And it's just the fact of the matter at this point in Dabo Swinney's career. It doesn't overshadow the things that he accomplished back in the 2010s, where he won multiple national championships and was the second best program without question over about a 10-year period. Those days are gone. It doesn't diminish what he did then, but it certainly does not mean that he is still the guy that he was then, especially that program. But one other thing I want to mention here, finishing up with Connor O'Gara here on the waitforit.com hotline on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. The SEC had several explosive outputs in week one. Of course, you mentioned Ole Miss. They dropped 76 points in their season opener. Arkansas against Arkansas Pine Bluff. They go crazy. You have Auburn shortening their quarters in the second half to 10 minutes because they're beating Alabama A&M. Is that just a product of the teams they're playing, which I think that has a lot to do with it? Or do you think that some of those offenses, specifically Auburn, who had some problems last year, have they sort of figured their way through those issues? And are they ready to really compete and try to take that next step in the SEC this season?
Yeah, I don't think all of those offenses are necessarily going to be world beaters. I think Arkansas is going to have a lot of positive moments. One of my biggest upsets that I had in the preseason was I have Arkansas beating Tennessee in a few weeks when they come to Fayetteville. And I think that Taylen Green kind of showed you why he's going to be week to week a really difficult guy to prepare for. It doesn't mean that Arkansas is all of a sudden going to be 8-4 or anything like that. But I just think that combination with he and Bobby Petrino is going to be really effective. Sam Pittman having a more involved role in the offensive line. I do think that's going to yield some positive results, and they're going to be a difficult team to have to play 60 minutes with. But I think the confirmation bias was certainly there. And, you know, you could look across a team like Auburn and see what they endured last year, which was painful. I mean, at one point I remember writing like a 2,500 word column about the 10 things I'd rather do than watch Auburn throw the football. And it was like, go get my wisdom teeth out, which I still haven't done yet. And like all these other, clean the showers, get a deep clean going. It was terrible. I mean, it was an absolute joke watching what they attempted to do throwing the football, like wholesale, not just any one specific, but like every element, the scheme, the quarterback, the offensive line, the receivers, like all of it was terrible. And this year with Hugh Freeze taking control of those play calling duties, I do think Peyton Thorne ends up being the SEC's most improved player. And I say that as someone that was really critical of him last year, but I do think the post-spring quarterback transfers are set up to fail year one. In year two, it's a much different story. He obviously has a lot more of those weapons available to him in the passing game, and that's going to be a big, big help with Keandre Lambert-Smith and Cam Coleman. Everybody's so excited about this freshman receiver class. But I think you saw shades of that, and I don't think that's necessarily going to be the case week in, week out. But this week's going to be a really good indicator of how much that year-to-year improvement's there, because they face a Cal team that, quite frankly, last year, like, they basically made them run the football, and Eugene Asante was ridiculous in that game in Berkeley, and they had to win a game that, look, I don't really think they had any business winning, but Jaden Ott gets hurt in the second half of that one, and they're able to pull it out on the road. But I think it's going to be a different story, different offensive game plan, and we're going to see Garrett. We're going to see a lot more from Peyton Thorne this season. And I think this game is going to be kind of the first indication of that.
Yeah. Peyton Thorne, I had him as one of the biggest risers in the SEC this season too, this offseason, just with the presence of legitimate bona fide wide receivers on that roster now. And I think they're young and they have a long way to go. But that's why you get a Lambert Smith, a guy like that in there who can really bridge that gap. See that transfer portal works, Dabo. Last one here, really quickly, about 30 seconds here. I have Nico Amoleva as my biggest X factor in the SEC because of what he could potentially do in the conference. It's just as a really successful quarterback and kind of keeping Tennessee ahead of the chains. What say you as far as an X factor, one player who could really overturn what your expectations are in the conference?
Nico's the truth, man.
I love
Nico. Nico Amoleva, say it with your chest. The full name is worth it. look. The guy is like, spend 5 minutes watching him and you'll get it. And you'll get that Tennessee fans are not crazy to be this in love with the quarterback. The things that he can do, man, it is so special. The off platform, the deep stuff, what he does hitting receivers in stride, even his mobility, some of the things that he can do in the ground game to be able to kind of keep you ahead of schedule. It's just like he does all the little things well. And then with the fact that he's got Josh Heupel and being able to have this offense that is just so prolific in the ground game too. I love all of it. And I do have concerns about Tennessee's defense in the back end, but man, if there's ever a guy that can kind of change the trajectory of what a program is capable of, Nico Amoleva, stay with your chest. He is that dude.
He's pretty talented. And if you didn't have a chance to watch him, you guys should all go make sure you check him out week two, because he is that guy. Very excited to see what he can do. And the SEC is back. Football is back. Connor Roguero, Saturday at Down South. Thank you so much for joining me here.
Appreciate it, man.
Thanks, buddy. Audio Overload up next. You're coming off the bench with me, Garrett Chapman, here. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com.
Welcome back in. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. 7:40 is the time. No more gas in the rain. It's also time for an audio overload here on Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. We're going to jump right into it here in just a moment. But big thank you to Connor Roguero joining me earlier. Had a little bit of college football conversation with him. I'm still in the midst of my fantasy football draft. I just went through and queued up a couple of players, Eric, and I just in case I miss them, because obviously I'm doing a radio show right now, so it's hard to do. But a big thank you to Connor Roguero here for joining us. We're gonna continue on with this college football conversation. Let's go hit an audio overload. What do you say? right. Number one, Brian Kelly is a little upset right now. Yes, it's because the LSU Tigers just are not able to get it done. Week one is supposed to be a setup week. It sets the tone for the rest of your season. Now, recently, he hasn't been able to get it done. And he feels like he is just saying the same thing over and over. Listen to Coach.
And we're sitting here again. We're sitting here again talking about the same things, about not finishing when you have an opponent in a position to put them away. But what we're doing on the sideline is feeling like the game's over. And I'm so angry about it that I got to do something about it. I'm not doing a good enough job as a coach. And I got to coach him better because it's unacceptable for us not to have found a way to win this football game. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, you see them losing to Florida State in back-to-back seasons. They now go down 27-20 to USC to start the year. LSU is 0-1 to start the season. And Miller Moss had a great game, 378 yards, one touchdown. But Jaquavius Marks, they couldn't keep him out of the end zone the second time. He scores his second touchdown of the game to put the game out of reach for LSU. And just more of the same for Brian Kelly. It's one of the things that I have on my overreactometer that we started the hour with. Is LSU capable of winning the big game with Brian Kelly? I think it's a legitimate, viable question. Because we haven't seen him do it. Outside of the one time in his first year where he gets it done against Alabama. That was an incredible football game there. Jaden Daniels put the team on his back. But guess what? Jaden Daniels is gone. He ain't suiting up. He was standing on the sideline, but that's as close as he was going to get to action in that game. Garrett Nussmeier is a damn good quarterback. I'm a big fan of his. But Garrett Nussmeier, yeah, he didn't do enough. He didn't do enough. They only get 20 points against a new-look USC defense. Danton Lynn is brought over from UCLA. They actually look very good. LSU also brought in a brand-new defensive coordinator down from Mississippi State. They look pretty damn good. Two defenses, actually really identical-looking teams, if you really think about it. Two coaches who were known as guys who could get their team to the playoff when they were at their last school. Lincoln Riley, of course, was over at Oklahoma. Brian Kelly was up at Notre Dame. They could get their guys to the dance, but when they got there, they had no partner. They were standing off alone in the corner. Then they go to a new school, new expectations. And the expectations were, you know, go win a national championship. Neither has come close to that fact. Both have Heisman Trophy quarterbacks that had gone off to the NFL. Picks number one and two for LSU and USC, and two defenses that were not very good. Big shoes to fill for either side, but let's see if Brian Kelly can eventually get it done. But one guy who did get it done in his first game, Fran Brown, Kyle McCord especially. What a fantastic game for this guy. 354 yards, four touchdowns, and the interception. He actually just came over from Ohio State. He was run out of town, and Fran Brown wants to send him a gift basket.
Nah, I'm just messing with him. Like, y'all went 3-and-out. You know, just messing around with him. Because you know what he can do. You know, he's a good football player, and we got that kind of relationship. But like, you'll be all right. Get him next time. Just, like, never worry. And I think that we needed that. We've never dealt with adversity. You know, we got to be down 6-0. There was a lot of things that we were able to deal with throughout the game that helped us and showed that, you know, we'll continue to play. We'll continue to count on each other and do things of that nature. So, I mean, they're not getting down. I mean, Kyle's a good football player. You seen it right there. I just sent Ryan Day a bottle of champagne for allowing us to get him.
A bottle of champagne. They're popping corks up there in Syracuse, New York. Kyle McCord under center. Of course, this is a team that's going to be playing the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets next week. They beat the Ohio Bobcats 38-22. You got a different beast coming up there. The team from the flats, they're able to run the ball pretty effectively. Georgia Tech 2-0 on the season. We'll see if they jump into that top 25 when it's all said and done. But Kyle McCord, I was a fan of his when he was at Ohio State, but he wasn't necessarily the guy to get it done. So they brought in Will Howard, I guess, and I don't know what else Will Howard's going to give you. But Kyle McCord, I think he's one of the biggest winners of the transfer portal, somebody who this portal was made for, somebody who needs that second opportunity to go out and reinvent himself and try something new at a different program. And Fran Brown was a believer in him, the former Georgia coach. I like that situation. I like that relationship. I think the Syracuse Orange, maybe not this year, but in the years to come, could be a team you know, that could legitimately contend in the ACC and kind of build its way up. The ACC is looking for some teams to fill out that second tier in the conference. Syracuse is, they've threatened in years past. Garrett Schrader was the old quarterback up there. It was a kind of an air raid system for Dino Babers, but he was run out of town. And this is a team that the cupboard was not exactly left completely dry. This is a team that was pretty solid last year. They weren't great, but they felt like there was that next level that they could reach. And that's why they brought Fran Brown in. That's why they went and got Kyle McCord. They want to compete at the next level. And Kyle McCord, great game. New test here coming up next week with Georgia Tech coming to town. We'll see what they're actually made of. And Georgia Tech looking to move to 2-0 in the ACC. Syracuse getting its ACC home opener. Another ACC team that really had a really good day. The Miami Hurricanes. They go on the road to Gainesville and beat the tar out of the Florida Gators. And now you got Miami Hurricane players walking off the field doing this. Yep, the Miami Hurricane players walking right past all of the recruits sitting on the sideline for this debacle of a game for the Florida Gators, telling them, we run the state of Florida. Well, as of right now, you do. Yet two 0-1 teams who occupy the other two spots in Gainesville and Tallahassee, and the U is looking good. Cam Ward's flying high. I talked about it earlier in the show. I'm not a super big believer in them yet. I need to see it week over week before we actually buy into Mario Cristobal and company down there. But look, the Miami Hurricanes, one thing they can do is recruit at a high level. And Mario Cristobal has done a very good job of that. And it helps when you can do it on the field as well as on the recruiting trail. And the Miami Hurricane players, maybe it's a little bit of smack talk. It's definitely a lot of bit of smack talk. But they're having their fun over there in Gainesville. Somebody who's having a little bit of fun over there at Oklahoma State, Mike Gundy. He's throwing some shade at Connor Stallions. Take a listen.
I can't. They won't let me hear it. If anybody's a good IT guy, we can get the guy from Michigan down here and let him hook me up. Even though he didn't do it. What was that song in... what was that song? You should know. Yeah, the song, it was kind of a partial rap in the shower. He called me, I didn't do it. It wasn't me.
Shaq.
What was it?
Yeah. It wasn't me.
Shaq. That's right. It wasn't me.
I know that was you.
It
wasn't me.
Oh, man. Look at Mike Gundy go, man. He's always worth a quote, isn't he? He's got a quote for just about everything. But that's it. Throwing some shade over there at Connor Stallions, of course, the sign-stealing debacle that was going up there in Ann Arbor at Michigan last year, the new documentary that came out. I don't know if anybody watched it out there. I'm not wasting my time with it. I know what happened. Everyone kind of knows what happened. And, they said that there's his side of the story. Whatever. I don't really care about it one way or the other. Apparently, there's a big old network of sign-stealing operations, everything all over the country. People alleged that Clemson was involved in it, among other programs, big blue blood programs, top-end programs that are competing for championships. Whatever. Proof's in the pudding. We got one team that got caught doing it. I haven't seen anybody else do it. But Mike Gundy's having a little bit of fun over there in Oklahoma State. The team that could potentially compete for and win the Big 12, they get a win comfortably over South Dakota State. Started a little bit slow, 17-6 in the first half, and then they just unload. One of the best running backs, one of the best players in the country in Ollie Gordon. He goes for 104 on the ground, two touchdowns. They eventually win over South Dakota State 44-20. But one big piece of the offseason is the development and introduction of helmet to coordinator conversation. They have the little radios that they stuck into the helmets. And Carson Beck, Carson Beck most recently talked about it after the game and the win against Clemson. Take a listen to what the quarterback had to say.
It was definitely different. I liked it a lot personally. There's still some times where, you know, you look over to the sidelines and, you know, we're not going, you know, we're going slow. We're not going fast. We still look at the signal, confirm everything. But I definitely think it picks up the pace of the game. It allows us to play faster on offense, play to play.
Yeah, play faster, play better. Help communication levels. I mean, I think that's been sort of the story. It's been a bit of a mixed bag here so far to the early goings of the season. We'll see more once the season kind of gets deeper. Teams actually play more true road environments. What is it actually going to be like? Because you saw Haynes King was having a couple of issues in Dublin, Ireland, in week zero against Florida State. When teams get going, and just a mixed bag. I mean, it's been in the NFL for years and years and years. I think it's just an adjustment period, and it's going to take some time before players fully get integrated with it. But good to hear that Carson Beck is feeling comfortable with it. If it gives him confidence and helps the Dogs play fast and loose, that's good thing. That means good things for this team. And another thing that means good things, Nate Frazier, the running back, the true freshman, he delivered a fantastic performance, and Kirby Smart acknowledged as much after that dominating performance against Clemson.
I get on him all the time because he's out of control. He is just foot fire, moving, going at the speed of light. Doesn't know, he might run into a brick wall, cutting back. And he cut back a couple times in practice. And I told him, I said, when you get in a real game, you cut back like that, they're going to light you up. You know, I actually said some things I can't say in here. But he cut back and went all the way across the field for about 50. And I told him, it's okay now. So he could do that.
Yeah, Nate Frazier actually delivered a fantastic performance. And sometimes I had a high school football coach. He told me that it was better to be going a million miles an hour in the wrong direction than not going a million miles an hour. Because if you can't teach that kind of thing. You got it or you don't. And Nate Frazier has got it. He's got that factor in him. And the dude churns. And you saw blast from the past here when he scored that touchdown. Shout out to Sandra Golden for the buy or sell question earlier this week on Friday. Look, the dude can ball. He can ball. But when he harkens back to the past where he did the bow and then the fun hands that DeAndre Swift used to do, he's shouting out back with Todd Gurley with the bow and everything else, and he hits the hashtag RBU on Twitter. That was awesome. As a kid, a guy who grew up a Georgia fan, seeing all of that happen and harkening back to all the great Georgia running backs the last 15 years or so, that was just a fun nod, and I'm glad that he did that. But last one here, a lot of people talk about the transfer portal, right? Specifically, Dabo Swinney. And Dabo Swinney, people have been vocal critics of the Clemson head coach. And one coach who uses the portal, I would say, most effectively and the way that it should be used is Kirby Smart. This is take a listen here. I'll give you a reaction here on the other side. But take a listen to what Kirby Smart had to say.
You know, if I want my team to stay my team. I've always said that. If you could give me every kid I sign, they stay at my program for 4 years and they can't leave, I would take that every day of the week. But if we're going to lose kids, we've got to replace them with high-quality kids that are character kids that are looking to have an opportunity to win a championship, that want to go somewhere and play. Because otherwise, you can't survive in the SEC without the depth you need. So it's a forced situation. You have to use it. So we use it selectively because we actually like signing high school players that can develop. And the guys that you see in our program most of the time are that.
Yeah. That's the way the portal's supposed to be used. All these coaches who try to build their core out of the transfer portal, looking at you, Florida State, you don't build programs that way. Not effectively. Mel Tucker tried to do that at Michigan State, and it failed. He got fired. Well, got fired for other reasons, but it didn't help that his team bottomed out after the transfer portal. He wasn't able to replicate it. I mean, just take a look at what Florida State's done. The lifeblood of your team was Jordan Travis. And the four games since he got hurt, they've been held to 300 yards or less of offense in all four of those games. It's because you lost the key to the castle. He was the core of that team. You're not able to replicate that, not because you're not talented, but because you don't have a core. Kirby Smart has a core. And you fill in the gaps in the portal. All right, that's a big bit of college football conversation here. We'll go NFL next. Falcons are kicking off week one on Sunday. It's time to celebrate just a little bit. We will discuss it. And I got a little sound that you need to hear because Justin Simmons, he sounds like he is a kid on Christmas. I'll let you hear that when we come back. You're coming off the bench with me, Garrett Chapman, right here. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. Ooh.
you get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly! Auto Parts!
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.